Well, hello and welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly again. I am David Connolly. This news is brought to you, of course, in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, without further ado, here are the main headlines from around the world. A 5,000-year-old Venus figurine is found in Turkey, near Troy. And in England, the funding crisis could cost Flag Fen Bronze Age Open Air Museum its future. A Scottish town is putting its past on display for all to see. And we report on a day school dealing with the Neolithic and Bronze Age in Yorkshire. A prehistoric Dudong worship site is discovered in the UAE, and over 2,000 new archaeological sites are discovered back in Britain on Exmoor. Scandinavians are descended from Stone Age immigrants and not from the previous population is a startling new discovery based on DNA evidence. While we have more startling news, we're looking at research on our human ancestors and their monogamy. Fridgehenge rises to meet the autumn equinox in back down in South England. And in Sri Lanka, there's excitement at the discovery of 3,500-year-old sites. A dolmen carved with petroglyphs is found in India. And settling down to the final story, we let you know about a series of lectures by the Wiltshire Archaeological and Natural History Society. A 5,000-year-old Venus figurine has been discovered as part of an excavation being carried out in Çanakkale's Ezine district. The excavation began in the field 3 weeks ago in cooperation with Germany's University of Tübingen. Assistant Professor Rustem Aslan, who is assistant director of the excavation, told the Anatolia news agency that the aim of the dig is to find settlements outside Troy from the Bronze Age. Some interesting finds have been unearthed during the excavation. One important item is a 5,000-year-old Venus figurine, which used to represent a woman at the time. Also, they found a seal stone, which is a very rare piece. In addition to these items, of course, they found stone axes, well-processed and decorated pots and spindle whorls. A funding crisis has put the future of one of Peterborough's major heritage attractions in jeopardy. Flag Fen Archaeology Park, one of Europe's most important Bronze Age sites located in England, may not be able to reopen after its winter break because of cash flow problems. It's believed the Bronze Age Centre and Archaeology Park will need tens of thousands of pounds if it is to reopen next year after it closes for a break in November. Fundraisers from the centre are blaming the credit crunch for a lack of grants it needs for survival. Now Flag Fen trustees are to hold crisis talks with Peterborough City Council and Opportunity Peterborough on Monday to look at the options available for rescuing the site, which dates back to 1300 BCE. The news comes after visitor numbers at the site rose in 2009, but the centre's general manager, Neil Hart, said it was still not enough to make the site self-sustaining. The current economic climate means that funding is particularly difficult to find, especially for everyday running costs, but the trust is continuing to identify potential sources of income. The site will be open to the public until November the 1st as planned, but what happens after that is uncertain. Newly appointed trustee, City Councillor Stephen Goldspink, said that closure is one thing everybody would wish to avoid. If the council was to provide help, Flag Fen must come up with a robust business plan to show it can become self-supporting and prove it can fit into the arts and heritage plans for the city. Well, that is truly shocking news, and we really hope to be coming back with better news in the future for this one. Some of the significant events in an Angus town's history, including its involvement in two wars, are being recalled to mark Scottish Archaeology Month. Montrose Museum has mounted a timeline exhibition charting the development of the area since prehistoric times. Some of the earliest artefacts on display include Mesolithic arrowheads dating from around 6000 BCE and a Stone Age flint axe. Visitors will be able to see how the town has changed down the years. The exhibition, There's a Time and Place, will be running until the end of October. You'll find that, as I say, at the Montrose Museum. A day meeting to mark Terry Manby's contribution to Yorkshire prehistoric studies will be held at Helmsley Arts Centre in North Yorkshire. organised and supported by the North Yorks Moor National Park Authority and the Yorkshire Archaeology Society. The event will take place on Sunday the 11th of October from 9:45 to 4:30 p.m. Speakers will include Ollie Cooper about the Caton Barrow, Chris Fenton Thomas about the Neolithic houses at Sowerby Cottage Farm, and Duncan Hale about Catterick and Scorton Ritual Complex, among many other speakers. If you want to find out more about that, then I would say go along to www.uwhg.org.uk and then look at activities. French archaeologists have discovered the oldest known place of worship dedicated to the Dudong, or the sea cow, on an island just north of Dubai. The sanctuary, believed to date back 3.5 to 3,200 years BCE, was discovered on Aqab Island in the United Arab Emirates, some 50 kilometres north of Dubai. The French Archaeological Mission in the Emirates and the Umm Al Gawain Museum said in the magazine Antiquity that the sanctuary on the deserted island provided key details on the rituals of prehistoric coastal societies in the Gulf. Aqab was a tuna fisherman's village more than 6,500 years ago, with circular buildings and a pile of dugong bones detected in the 1990s. The dugong still exists in the Gulf, with adults growing up to 4 metres long and weighing up to 400 kilograms. The sanctuary was first thought to be an abattoir, but on analysis, it was found to be a carefully constructed platform on two levels, containing the remains of around 40 dugongs, as well as tools, stones and ornaments. The archaeologist said the Aqab monument was used for rituals celebrating the giant mammal and has no parallel in Neolithic times in other parts of the world. Similar structures, though, have been found off the Australian coast, but are only several hundred years old. I'm going to be showing my age here, as I actually remember back in the 90s when they were doing these surveys. I was myself working on the Abu Dhabi Island Survey at the time. Happy days indeed. More than 2,200 previously unknown archaeological sites have been discovered on Exmoor in England, and significant new information has been added to a further 800 sites, thanks to painstaking research over the last 2 years. Two archaeologists from Exmoor National Park Authority looked at more than 12,000 aerial photographs as part of the Exmoor National Mapping Programme. This time-consuming exercise was designed to help build up a more detailed picture of Exmoor's past by identifying and interpreting archaeological sites. The work, which was funded by English Heritage as part of its national mapping programme, has created a highly detailed map of Exmoor's archaeology. During the survey, the archaeologists examined piles of aerial photographs dating from 1946 right up to 2009, the vast majority of them from English Heritage's National Monuments record. Archaeologist Kane Hegarty, who worked alongside fellow archaeologist Cathy Toms on the project, said that they had been surprised not only by how well some earthwork sites have survived, but also by their number and extent, which even includes sites from the early prehistoric period. Most of the newly discovered sites date from the recent periods of Exmoor's history. However, much older remains were also found, such as the traces of Bronze Age settlements, some 3,500 years old. One of the most interesting finds was possibly a Neolithic or Bronze Age enclosure on Little Hangman Hill near Combe Martin. Although impossible to be completely accurate about its age, it is similar when compared to other sites thought to be around that date found on Dartmoor and Bodmin Moor. To find out more about the project and the wider national mapping programme, you have to go along to the English Heritage website, that's www.english-heritage.org.uk, and then have a look at the aerial survey web pages. Today's Scandinavians are not descended from people, but they are descended from people, but they're not descended from people who came from Scandinavia at the conclusion of the last ice age, but apparently from a population that arrived later with the introduction of agriculture. This is one conclusion of a new study straddling the border line between genetics and archaeology, which involves Swedish researchers and which has now been published in the journal Current Biology. The hunter-gatherers who inhabited Scandinavia more than 4,000 years ago had a very different gene pool than the present population. This was the findings of a team led by the Department of Evolutionary Biology at Uppsala University and the Centre of Geogenetics at the University of Copenhagen. The study involved using DNA from Stone Age remains to investigate whether the practices of cultivating crops and keeping livestock were spread by immigrants or represented innovations on the part of the hunter-gatherers. Obtaining reliable results from DNA from such ancient human remains involves very complicated work, and the initial DNA sequencing of Stone Age material actually took place 3 years ago. Significant time was then required for researchers to confirm that the material really was thousands of years old. The research shows that today's Scandinavians are not the direct descendants of the hunter-gatherers who lived in the region during the Stone Age. This entails the conclusion that some form of migration to Scandinavia had taken place, probably at the onset of the agricultural Stone Age. The extent of this migration is as yet impossible to determine, but I'm sure they're onto that one right now. Now, back to an even more interesting story. When it comes to love, we Homo sapiens are a very peculiar breed. Tell me about it. We thrill at the thought of a torrid affair while dreaming about the perfect someone with whom we can spend the rest of our life. According to a new study, this never-ending tug-of-war for our hearts is encoded in the finger bones of Neanderthals and the upright-walking primate Australopithecus. Emma Nelson of the University of Liverpool and a team of researchers combed through literature on early human-like primates in search of fossils that contain hands with intact index and ring fingers. In humans and primates, the ratio between these two fingers is thought to be a telltale marker for how much of the androgen class of hormones, and specifically testosterone, someone was exposed to while in the womb. Extra androgenin leads to longer ring fingers, the thinking goes, and therefore a lower index to ring finger ratio. Though highly contentious, studies indicate that men who receive high levels of androgen before birth are more likely to be stronger, faster, and more sexually competitive. Women who receive higher levels of androgen may also have similar traits. The Neanderthals had long ring fingers, suggesting that they were a promiscuous bunch, like primates alive today. They probably lived in groups. Males may have kept harems of female mates, or males and females may have mated with multiple partners. As to Australopithecus afarensis, living between 4 and 3 million years ago, long before modern humans, its short ring finger hints that it was faithful to a single mate. But Nelson says that this doesn't sit well, as these were very small creatures that probably lived in groups and were being eaten by predators. How do you keep from mating with a different member of the group, she says. Dean Snow of Pennsylvania State University at University Park commented that what we were seeing is very interesting. The difference between being pair-bonded and non-pair-bonded mating is a major watershed within primates. And if a distinction is that Neanderthals weren't pair-bonded and modern humans were, this would be a major consideration in trying to figure out why modern humans outcompeted Neanderthals in Europe. Pair-bonded males help feed and look after females while they are pregnant, while females and males both forage equally in non-pair-bonded social structures. But because the work involved is such a tiny sample size, it is highly speculative. Emma Nelson stressed that firm conclusions about the sex lives of our ancestors can't be made until the team examines many more fossil hominids, not least of which should be the skeletons of Homo sapiens themselves that lived during the same period as the Neanderthals. Now, hands up, all of you who have now just looked at your ring fingers. I'm not mentioning what mine's like. Organic Milk Cooperative has unveiled its own monument in homage to the autumn equinox. Fridge Henge was revealed at 5:53 a.m. on Tuesday the 22nd of September at NC Farm in Somerset, just off the A303 near the real Stonehenge site in Wiltshire. According to the cooperative, Fridge Henge is a monument to organic farming and is intended to symbolise the natural goodness of milk that has been produced on farms that don't use artificial chemicals and pesticides. Fridge Henge is made up of over 30 recycled fridges, each with a cow print design. Unlike Stonehenge, however, Fridge Henge will be taken down in a week. An archaeological site more than 3,300 years old has been found in Udaranchamadama area of Sri Lanka by a group of local archaeologists. The site had been discovered by Professor Raj Somedava and his team while excavating an area belonging to the Sri Jayabodharama temple. The ruins of the cemetery have been found earlier, and the team believed that traces of the village that used the cemetery could be discovered from this excavation. The discovery of this site is a landmark, as this is the first time in Sri Lanka that they have found artefacts that are more than 3,300 years old. Grinding stones, painted pots, granite tools and other items were among the findings. Excavations are to be completed within the next 2 weeks, but the team expects to obtain more information from further excavations in the future. Now, staying in that area, a huge dolmen with four petroglyphs that portray men with tridents and a wheel with spokes has been found at Kullur, near Tirukoyilar in... I can never do this one. Tirukoyilar in the Indian state of Tamil Nadu. What is special about the latest find is that while two men portrayed in the petroglyphs have tridents in their hands, a third is brandishing an as yet unidentified weapon. Unusually, these figures have been chiselled onto the dolmen's capstone. While the prehistoric artist has provided a geometrical pattern to the two men with the tridents and other weapons, he has chiselled the third man with an ornament on his chest in a free-flowing manner. This, however, is the second time that a dolmen with petroglyphs has been found in Tamil Nadu. The three figures, though, belong to different periods, but the two men holding tridents are chronologically closer to each other. The archaeologists estimated that while the dolmen itself was around 2,500 years old, the petroglyphs might only be 2,000 years old. The engraving of a spoked wheel was incredibly significant, because the men who erected the dolmen obviously had knowledge of this technology. Six more dolmens were found nearby on the banks of the lake, and in addition, three dolmens were found on the bed of the lake at Kullur, which formed at a later period. Two lectures about prehistory will be held next October at the Wiltshire Archaeological and Natural History Society. Keeping Up Appearances is by Ben Roberts. It's about prehistoric jewellery in Britain and beyond. About 4,500 years ago, some inhabitants of Britain suddenly started wearing and being buried with their jewellery. Subsequent centuries saw objects being fashioned out of amber, jet, gold, copper, bone and faience in a bewildering variety of forms. These explosions of different displays reflected many of the transformations in societies over 1,500 years. The talk will look at what jewellery prehistoric people wore and explore what this tells us about these Bronze Age communities. That will be on, let's see, Saturday the 24th of October. Booking, by the way, is recommended. And a little bit early on the 10th of October, there will be the AGM, followed by a lecture by Professor Mike Parker Pearson, entitled The Stonehenge Riverside Project, Recent Results. This will actually be a very popular one as well, so again, I would advise advance booking. If you're interested in attending either of these lectures, phone them up on 01380-727-369. That was 01380-727-369. Or send them an email to wanhs@wiltshireheritage.org.uk. You can also pop along to their website again, and that is, as I said, www.wiltshireheritage.org.uk. Now, all things are going great guns with this new beta system called Open Archive. So if you are in the UK and you have a report that you want to upload, get yourself along to www.openarchive.co.uk and just see what you can do. And while we're talking about it, at the moment we're actually working really quite hard on the next issue of Past Horizons magazine before we disappear off to Croatia in 10 days' time. I highly recommend that you get along and have a look at some of the past issues. There's 9 issues up there just now on www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. And can I also remind you that Badger is expanding into the thing called the Badger Federation. If you've not had a chance to have a look at that yet, then why not? Get along to www.badgerfed, that's badgerfed.co.uk. And remember, you can always find a lot more at Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks for listening again to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you return again next week.